From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of February 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vicks at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, Indiana farmer Vernon Bowman has had his case with Monsanto argued at the highest court in the land. And portions of a proposed rule to enhance the protection of brokerage customers may burden the industry to the point that it requires customers to fully fund their positions. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and other ag news stories. And then a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Gary Schnittke, farm management specialist at the University of Illinois. As we close out our day together, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City about the agricultural weather forecast. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Let's check the numbers in Chicago as they finished up this afternoon from the CME Group, the nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat. That's the March at $7.38.5. That's $7.38.5. A settlement price there up 6.25. And July on the harvest month at $7.48. A settlement as well up 6.25. From Kansas City, the July hard red at $7.88 settled down 8.5 cents back in Chicago from the corn pit now. And these are closes and not settlements. The March contract for the corn at $6.99. 9.75 up 4.5 cents. The May up 3.5 at $6.95.5. And July corn at $6.82.25 up 2 cents. September $5.80.25, 2.5 higher. And December futures $5.60.5 up 2.75. March $5.71.5 up 3 cents. March soybeans $14.82.75, a settlement price here up 12.5. May at $14.68.5 settled 11.25 higher, and July at $14.56.25 up 10.75 on a settlement price. August soybeans $14.17.75 up 14, and next year's November settled $12.87 up 12.25 cents in the bean pit. Bean meal futures at $4.33.60 were $8.30 higher. Bean oil on a Wednesday afternoon at $15.07, a settlement price 46 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the day with the April at $128.22.5 down $1.32.5, and the lean hogs at $90.37.5 were 37.5 lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day. March contract, $94.46 a barrel, down $2.20. The RBOB, or wholesale price of gasoline, at $3 and nickel and 2 tenths. That's 6 8 tenths of a cent lower today than it was yesterday. And ethanol at $2.36 9 tenths, a tenth of a cent higher. The difference between the two is 68 3/10 of a cent, 7 cents narrower than yesterday. Natural gas at $3.28, 8 tenths of a cent higher, and the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.14 9 tenths, up 3 1/10, or rather down 3 1/10 of a cent. Gold futures on the day at $1,577.50, finished down $26.10. U.S. dollar at 81.07. That's up 0.60. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, as it comes from the National Weather Service. Mostly sunny skies. A high of 24 degrees on a northwest wind at about 10 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 15 this afternoon. Partly cloudy this evening. A low of 14. Wind chills between 4 and 9. And then tomorrow, a 50% chance of snow. Afternoon, mostly cloudy. A high of 30 degrees. Wind chill values between 4 and 14. On an east wind at 8 to 18 miles an hour. Thursday evening, snow, freezing rain before midnight. Then areas of snow and freezing drizzle. A low of 28, east-southeast winds. This, of course, for the Urbana-Champaign area at 10 to 18 miles an hour, gusting to 28. The chance of precipitation Thursday evening set at 100%. New ice accumulation of less than a tenth of an inch. New snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches possible. Areas of freezing drizzle before noon on Friday as that storm extends right into the morning. Mostly cloudy and a high near 39. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of February. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. Her office is right here in Champaign County, Illinois. But today, she comes to us from the nation's capital. How is it in Washington, D.C.?
Well, it's actually cloudy with some sunshine peeking through, so probably not a lot different than at home other than it's in the 30s. So it's halfway decent. They were having pretty strong winds. So the wind chills, they were all complaining about how cold it was.
You said,
they don't know what cold is.
You don't know what cold is. You might by tomorrow. The Outlook Forum is scheduled for this week, and that's why you're in D.C. Tell me what's going on.
Well, the meeting starts tomorrow, and it offers an awful lot of interesting different forums other than, you know, Friday morning, of course, we'll have the acreage announcement as well as the ending stocks projections. And plenty of speculation about what may or may not happen there. But a lot of people from different countries here, France, Japan, China, and we'll be covering the whole gambit of everything from farm income all the way through cotton farming, sugar farming, pretty much every aspect, you know, the livestock side of things and poultry. So it should be interesting. Unfortunately, the person can't take in everything. But I'm going to try and bone up in as much as I can and get to talk to as many people as I can.
Well, we'll try to talk to you separately outside of our regular market interviews, maybe over the weekend or Monday morning sometime, and I'll put that on the air during the week next week and get your impressions of the Outlook Forum. But let's deal directly with the marketplace for today. Apparently, Japan's cutting back on its corn use.
Well, they are, and they're saying that they're trying to find alternatives, and it's primarily due to higher prices. Now, that's not good news for us because Japan has always been the largest consumer of corn that we've had on the export side of the marketplace. So whether they're waiting to see or whether they're threatening, you know, to see if they can put a kink into the marketplace, nobody knows. But, again, it's not great news. We do have China back in the market. China came in and bought 350,000 metric tons of wheat today, as well as buying wheat from Australia and Canada, and we expect to see some more bean sales there. We saw bean prices today go up and test 1492. They couldn't make the 1498 that we had put in before, so we saw profit taking come in. But until things settle down, and you know, China's probably going to play a little bit of catch up, I expect there'll be some pretty good support in that market.
Mm-hmm. And then speaking of exports just a bit, some of the reports have been delayed.
Yes, you know, because of the holiday on Monday, we will not have export sales tomorrow like we normally would. Usually wreaks havoc with the marketplace because that's the thing that the market looks forward to talking about every single week. So we won't see that until Friday morning. And, you know, Friday we're going to have cattle on feed report coming out. And it should be kind of interesting because they're expecting the on-feed number to be about 93.8, not a whole lot different from last month. Placements at 100%, marketing's at almost 105. And so we'll have to see once if that's true. I kind of believe it. Choice Select this week is down to 1.58. And, you know, that tells me that we've got an awful lot of, we're really tight. Let's just say we're really, really, really current in the feedlots.
Yeah, why don't you take us back through that ratio and do a little teaching at the moment. What's the 1.58 mean on the Choice Select ratio?
Well, when you look at the feedlot, if you have 75% choice, you usually get paid 100%. excuse me. I apologize for that.
Oh, that's okay.
So anyway,
Yeah, go on.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say,
if you have 75% choice, they will usually pay you choice price on 100% of the animals. When you start to fall down to these levels, the Choice Select, where you have 1.5 choice animals for every one select animal, it's going to put pressure on futures prices just because of the fact that they are not as mature as they probably would like them to be, but there's a demand for the meat, so they're going to take them anyway, and you're just basically going to get less of a price for them.
Absolutely. This is changing topics just a bit. This is February, of course. It's crop insurance setting month, and We don't have very many days left, so we're starting to get pretty clear a view of what those numbers will look like. What do you see?
Well, we only have 6 market days left after today, actually, and right now our average on December corn is at 570.5. So if we stay in this area, even if we go down to 560, we're still going to be very close to the number that we were at last year. On corn, or on beans, we're at 1297 and 5/8 as of the close today, and so very strong numbers again. You know, should most certainly bode well in case we get into any major problems again this year. And what it'll also do is, in most cases, we normally don't violate those numbers by much more than maybe 60, 70 cents below them on corn, maybe a dollar lower than that on beans. So, you know, it would probably put us down around the $5 level on corn and maybe the $12 level on beans. Once you have this set, farmers selling and everything slows down if you start to really, really drop the price. It's the same thing we've seen on your buy, Todd. You know, farmer selling pretty much is nil right now because of the fact that we've dropped the price back, although it looks like we're going to actually settle above $7 today. So that's good news again.
Yeah, so let's stay with the insurance for the moment, because I know the Stuart Peterson and you do not sell crop insurance. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so now when you talk to your clientele, how do you work crop insurance into their marketing plans? Because I'm sure that you do.
Well, I think, you know, there's no question about the fact that insurance is a key to managing risk. I can't see a farm going without having insurance, and right now, I think if you have the opportunity, 85% coverage on corn is certainly called for there. And having insurance coverage on beans is probably more important now than it's ever been when you look at the prices that we're at and input costs. We work it in from the idea that when you look at crop insurance, you cannot look at crop insurance as necessarily a risk management plan other than a disaster management plan. Now, we do have revenue assurance. There's no question about that. But again, you know, you have to be always thinking about the difference between having a disaster, let's say, and having a protected price where you know you're going to make a really good profit. So what we're always weighing all the time is, what are the benefits? If you have crop insurance, do you need to do options? Do you need to do futures? What do you need to do? And then look at the circumstances that that individual farm is in and make that call. So it's not as easy as just a blanket saying you need to do this. But they are definitely two different instruments that are both valuable tools when it comes to managing risk.
There are a couple of items. You mentioned March corn probably would settle, and in fact it did, at $7.50. So it settled above $7 today. How important, just to the mentality of the marketplace, might that number be?
I think it's extremely important, and especially when you're headed into option expiration on Friday. You know, the big question will be, what option strike price will we look to hang? Now, on the other side, with the Outlook Forum announcing the numbers that they're going to announce on Friday morning, should they cut acreage, and there's some talk that maybe they will, should they cut acreage, I think then, you know, we could see a much higher old crop corn price rather rapidly, because it'll support the new crop corn price. But it's extremely important. I think that from a psychological standpoint, the minute that you go to $6.99, people feel that there's not much value, that the value is really lost. Right. And it's one penny below $7. So I think it might bring a little bit of corn out of the country, but I'd be surprised.
So for reference, once we get to Friday morning, the trade is thinking acreage for corn at what, 99 million?
Yes.
Okay, and so anything below that's going to be a bit of a surprise for the trade.
I would think so. You know, now there's two sides to look at. The commercial side of the trade is thinking very much of the 97 million area. And so, you know, you have dissenting factions going on. We, of course, have Informa, and I think Informa is actually going to come out on Friday again. Now, if we would come in and let's say that the USDA came in at 99 million acres, it's going to be negative to the market. If Informa would come in and actually drop their numbers, I think it would stabilize really quickly, because it's a circumstance where one thing we have to remember is that this is an outlook number that has been determined well in advance of when it's going to be announced on Friday. And this is a number that's going to carry a trend line yield, And, you know, so that should be about 161 and a half right in that neighborhood. And so it is just nothing more than an outlook and an idea to be able to, well, we have to remember that what that number does is guides the whole world from the standpoint of the end user and the producer and all the interlinked businesses in between. And so they're basically coming out, they're going to give us a number that's going to say, we expect you to have normal weather, and this is what it's going to be if that's the case. Then the trade will analyze where they expect things to be, and then ultimately that's where we'll go. But, you know, what the reaction is will be the different thing. It'll be either a dead nothing type of report, or it'll be a big reacting report, and then eventually reality comes back in.
Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Jackie Vikes is with Stuart Peterson in Champaign, Illinois, talking to us by cell phone from Washington, D.C., where she'll be attending the Ag Outlook Forum sponsored by USDA tomorrow and Friday. We'll have more complete details from her on that next week, I'm sure. Coming up next, Dave Dickey will be here. He's your Director of Agricultural Programming and will help us take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, U.S. Supreme Court justices seemed skeptical Tuesday of a farmer's attorney who argued his client is not violating a Monsanto patent by buying soybeans from a grain elevator to plant with the expectation that those soybeans would carry the Roundup Ready trait. Vernon Bowman, a 75-year-old farmer from Indiana, purchased soybeans from a local grain elevator as a cheaper way to get a double crop planting following winter wheat. He did so counting on the prospect that a high percentage of the seeds would be Roundup Ready. Monsanto Company sued Bowman in 2007 for patent infringement. The Supreme Court opted to hear the case because of its unique nature as the first patent case involving a self-replicating technology, in this case soybeans. Bowman's attorney argued that Monsanto's patent rights were exhausted after the first crop is grown from those patented seeds. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said that the court had never applied patent law to allow someone to create a copy of an original. Portions of a proposed rule to enhance the protection of customers' margin funds could make hedging prohibitively expensive for farmers and the small to mid-sized futures commission merchants that serve them. The proposed rule includes a provision that would require the FCM to take a capital charge on all customer accounts that were under-margined one day after a margin call was issued. Currently, there is a 3-day grace period. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission rule says the purpose of this proposal is to encourage better risk management by FCMs. But if the change is enacted, FCMs would likely require customers to pre-fund potential margin calls. China plans to require increased testing of U.S. pork exports to verify that the meat is free of a banned feed additive. China intends to require U.S. exporters to show that a third party has independently confirmed that no ractopamine residue is present in meat. China has a zero-tolerance policy for the medicated feed additive. U.S. officials are trying to push back the potential March 1st start date, which would give trade negotiators from both countries more time to agree on a third-party verification process. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. If you have not yet picked up your tickets for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting, it's not very far away, just a couple of weeks. On the 5th day of March, it's a Tuesday over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. There aren't very many left, less than 40 the last time I heard, and that was on Monday, so the number probably has gone down. You should call right now, 217-333-7000. 7300 for your tickets to the All-Day Agricultural Outlook. The cost is $25. The number to call, 217-333-7300. Now up next, you know, the Ag Economist at Illinois and the Ohio State have looked at the net payout figures for federal crop insurance. I'll have more on which crops are most heavily dependent upon government subsidies. The net farm payments are the lowest for rice, soybeans, and corn, say University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke and the Ohio State University's Carl Zuloff. They cooperated in a quick study looking at federal crop insurance net farm payments. The net payments are a calculation of the total payouts per crop minus the total premiums paid in. Again, here are the results of those calculations. Gary Schnitke.
Net farm payments are the lowest for rice, soybeans, and corn, and the highest for sorghum, cotton, and wheat. So the lowest means is that rice, soybeans, and corn received relatively less for what they paid in, for what they paid out. Sorghum, cotton, and wheat have received more. And it's highly correlated to how risky the crop is. Rice is not as risky of a crop. It's all irrigated pretty much, so it doesn't have much yield risk. Soybeans and corn, while they're risky, they're less risky than, say, cotton in the South.
Schnitke and Zuloff stated this net farm insurance payment as a value of the production.
Rice got 0.8% of net farm insurance payment compared to its total production. Corn, 2.7%. So if corn has a $800 value of production, 2.7% come back in net payments. Sorghum and cotton are at 10%. So 10% of their value comes back in terms of insurance payments.
The difference among the crops and the payouts is directly related to yield variability. Rice is irrigated and therefore very stable. Other crops are not so stable, and this instability in yield goes to the question of fairness across the crops, says Gary Schnitke.
And that does raise an equity issue, because if and all these crop insurance payments are subsidized, so those are crops with more yield variability are getting a higher proportion of it in their subsidy.
One way to make this inequity more balanced, suggests Schnitke and Zuloff, is to pick a percentage as to the value of the production and apply it evenly. The payout is equal, for instance, to 2% of the value of the production. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, this is the closing market report on this Friday, or rather Wednesday afternoon. Let's take a look at the cash grain market. On the phone line with us, Scott Butcher. He's at the Anderson's facility in Logansport, Indiana. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good. How are you, Todd? We all wish it was Friday, don't we?
Yes, we do. Hey, tell me about the basis very quickly. We only have about 45 seconds or so.
Okay, yeah. I mean, things really unchanged in our area, staying pretty strong on corn and soybeans both. Probably going to see a little pressure on bean basis with the market being up 50 to 60 cents here the last couple of days. So things are, probably pretty status quo.
The ag outlook in Washington, D.C., have you on pins and needles yet?
No, really have not seen, I guess maybe for now we'll, see what happens, but sure seems like things will be interesting, that's for sure.
And quickly, just the spot month bids, please.
Right now, cash corn, we would be 739, cash soybeans, 1490.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Scott Butcher will be back in just 2 minutes.
It's National Cherry Pie Day. The origin of the day has been lost, but maybe George Washington has something to do with America's second most popular pie. When as a young boy, he made his famous quote, "I cannot tell a lie, I chopped down the cherry tree." On this day in agricultural history in 1829, Yingling Brewery on Center Street in Pottsville, Pennsylvania opened. The Eagle Brewery is the oldest still operating in the U.S. In 1872, Cyrus W. Baldwin received a patent for a vertical geared hydraulic electric elevator. It was installed in the Stevens Hotel in New York City. In 1872, Silas Noble and Jay Cooley of Massachusetts were issued a patent on a toothpick manufacturing machine. They set up a factory in Strong, Maine, and machinery was developed to peel blocks of wood into long, thin ribbons. The ribbons were cut into toothpicks, which were moved by pitchfork into the sun to dry like hay. Then they were sorted and packed by hand. In 1873, on this date, Luther Childs Crowell of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, was granted a patent for a machine which made square-bottom paper bags. It's still the basic design that's used today. And in 2001, foot-and-mouth disease ravages livestock in Britain in the worst epidemic since 1967. By March, it has spread to mainland Europe. Millions of animals are destroyed, and the European Union banned export of meat and livestock for weeks. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview. Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast, Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Hey, Todd. Hope things are going good over there.
Oh, you know, I made a trip north to Hoopston this morning with a speaking engagement there and had a fantastic time. It was a magnificent crowd, and it was cold, but it was not a bad trip. Tomorrow evening, though, Dave Dickey and company will be headed north again towards the Kankakee area and Chicago, going to Bradley, Illinois, for an Ag Outlook. And it appears they're going to have some skating to do if that event actually happens. What do you think will be the case tomorrow evening?
Well, I think if they can hustle back home again, maybe they'll be able to escape the worst of the conditions. It's going to be kicking in during the evening hours, so going up will probably be okay. Coming back might be a little risky. I don't know. It really kind of depends on the storm system, and it is still expected to become fairly well-defined. It's going to be a major event for hard red winter wheat country and a significant event in the sense of easing some dryness across Iowa and parts of northern Missouri, and then, of course, for Illinois and points eastward. It's not going to be nearly the storm that it will be out to the west, but it will be enough to create some travel issues across the region. We do expect a little bit of everything to come with this storm, rain, freezing rain, sleet, and snow, and it will be a bit of a challenge traveling across Illinois, certainly central and northern portions of the state in particular as we get into the evening tomorrow, and even tomorrow afternoon in the western part of the state. Iowa will be in the thick of things for most of the day tomorrow, as will parts of Missouri. And we'll likely see this precipitation spread off to the east and north as we move on into Thursday night into Friday. And indeed, the system will be weakening so that the areas across the Great Lakes region will see mostly snow and a little bit of freezing rain. But it won't be nearly the precipitation producer that it will be back to the southwest.
And this is the first in a series of precipitation producers that are headed across the United States, in particular the western and northwestern parts of the Great Plains and then the Midwest?
We actually have a couple of storm systems here. I don't know that it's going to last much longer than that kind of a series. It isn't necessarily a trend changer here, but a short-term burp, I guess, in the overall dominating pattern. So we'll have a second system coming into the plains sometime late this weekend into early next week. It will spread snow again across a big part of the Midwest with a little freezing rain as well. That will be out of the way come the first half of next week. So probably by Tuesday night, the storm system will be winding down, but it'll still be maybe Wednesday of next week, a week from now, before the second storm is actually exiting the region. After that, it should be a lot quieter across the region with cold temperatures still prevailing, though.
All right. Thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
You betcha. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday afternoon of the Closing Market Report. Visit us online if you get the opportunity. The address there is willag.org. We have a brand new website. It's really good. Looks great on your regular computer, your tablet, and your phone. It's all at willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.